Welcome back. It is the Paula Gordon Show. We're delighted, Bill Russell and I, to be in the governor's office in the state of New Mexico with Governor Gary Johnson. There seems to me to not only be a puritanical element to this, the I get to tell you what to do and you can't do it because I say so, but also, if you'll forgive kind of old-fashioned terminology, almost a classist kind of a divide that those who are in charge get to say. And it would seem to me that many of the people who go to jail for this stuff are not the engineers and the doctors and the accountants and the people who live a middle-class life, and that there seems to be a divide here that doesn't seem right.
Well, Paula, this is staggering. I'm going to ask both of you. How many people were arrested in the United States last year on drug-related crime?
I have no idea.
How about taking
millions.
A guess?
5 million.
1,600,000 people. Now, when you do the math there, when you take away pre-adolescence, that's like one out of every 200 people in this country are getting arrested on drug-related crime. Now, that is staggering. Yeah. That is absolutely staggering. Out of those 1,600,000 arrests, 800,000 of those arrests are for marijuana alone. And out of those 800,000 arrests for marijuana, 400,000 of those arrests are Hispanic. Tell me that half the users of marijuana in this country are Hispanic. No way. Back to your earlier point. If you are of color, if you are black, if you are Asian, if you are Hispanic, your chances of your arrest ending up in incarceration are almost 7-1 versus an Anglo getting arrested and actually spending time in jail. These laws are terribly, terribly discriminatory.
I've also, kind of carrying this forward, we were last week in the presence of a former governor in the state of Georgia who was bemoaning the fact that during his 8 years in office, they had spent $1 zillion, never mind the number, a big chunk, on more and more prisons. And there were tears in his eyes. He said, if during that 8 years when I was the governor, if we could have spent half that on education instead of building more prisons, which were for mostly nonviolent crimes, think what we could have done. I would think that that would be a terrible heartache for any governor.
Well, we are actually talking about $50 billion a year.
That's a
zillion.
All
states, $50 billion a year, all states, state and federal. And yes, that is a whole lot of money that could be going into other areas of priority. I hear the criticism all the time that, well, what will law enforcement do? Well, gee, maybe law enforcement will go out and enforce a lot of these laws right now that they don't have the time to go out and enforce, like litter laws or real crime, real property crime, violent crime. And again, back to drug use or alcohol use. Hey, you use drugs, you use alcohol, you do harm to someone else, whether that be physical harm or property damage, that's against the law. That's criminal and always will be. But that's where our emphasis ought to be.
I want to just follow on one piece that you said there. This business about the bad things that enforcing these laws then generate. The business about enticing law enforcement agencies to take there's a fancy word for this, to take the property that is involved.
Asset forfeiture.
Thank you, yes. Doesn't it beg?
It begs reform. It's something right now during this legislative session that we believe we are going to reform. And that very simply will say that, look, rather than an automatic asset forfeiture upon arrest, you will actually have to be convicted. And if you're convicted, the asset forfeiture then will go to the state general fund and not into the law enforcement funds, which currently, again, whether we like to admit it or not, law enforcement is focusing on a little bit of marijuana in a real fancy car because they can impound and seize that real fancy car.
And I had not realized the seriousness of what you're describing. It sounds flagrantly unconstitutional. It is the sort of thing that I would not believe could possibly happen
in this country. We have given up our constitutional rights in the name of the war on drugs.
What you're telling me is if I leave here in my rented car and, well, maybe not the rented car, that may be different, but assuming I had my car and I got stopped because I look suspicious, and I do, I look suspicious. I wasn't going to say that. thank you. That if somebody thought that there was a reasonable chance I was a drug user or a dealer or something, that they have the right to take my vehicle from me and to sell that, even if I have not been convicted.
Yes, yes.
And put it back into the law enforcement budget.
Yes, yes. And not only
that. How did we get to that state?
Let me add a little bit to that also.
Oh, it's worse.
Well, it is worse. Don't you have a sense today, don't we all have a sense that nobody's really getting arrested over marijuana?
Yeah.
Well, I pointed out earlier that there are 800,000 arrests each year for marijuana. Bill, you're driving down the street and you're caught with a little bit of, you've got marijuana paraphernalia. In New Mexico, that happens to be a worse crime than actually having a little bit of marijuana. You will actually be put in jail. You'll be arraigned the next morning. And I talked to a girl a few months ago in Boulder who had been stopped in New Mexico, had spent the night in jail, appeared for arraignment the next morning in an orange jumpsuit, shackled at her wrists and her feet, for marijuana paraphernalia. Now, that will go on your record for the rest of your life, whether you're proven innocent or guilty, and you will have spent a day or two, perhaps, in jail over that. That's the reality.
And what is paraphernalia?
I mean, paraphernalia, a pipe used in smoking marijuana, for example.
But if there were no residue in it, would
there would have to be residue in it. But
is this again, typical of other states as well?
You know, to tell you the truth, I'm not sure. But Paula, in New Mexico, marijuana paraphernalia is worse than a little bit of the substance itself.
This sounds like Alice in Wonderland.
Well, this is Alice in Wonderland in New Mexico, but I have a sense that every single state has its quirks that would make every single state sound like Alice in Wonderland when it comes to these issues.
Speaking of Alice in Wonderland, I can't not ask the question. You've been thinking about this. You've been talking with it. You've had opportunities to talk to a broad range of people around the country and in New Mexico. You've had to deal with the legislature.
And the world.
Assuming that someone had the grace to bring you a magic wand and say, Governor Johnson, it's, you know, you don't have to deal with the legislature. You don't have to deal with the Congress. You don't have to deal with any of the opposition you've had to overcome. How would you modify the laws? How would you modify behaviors? How would you modify our perspectives? But starting with the laws.
Well, starting with the laws, I would legalize marijuana tomorrow, similar to what we're currently doing with alcohol. I mean, a controlled system similar to alcohol. And then waving my magic wand, you would actually adopt some heroin maintenance programs that would take the entire money incentive away from heroin, the entire incentive for a heroin addict to go out and recruit other heroin addicts. I'm not inventing anything here. You'd go to a model like Zurich. Now, with regard to these other drugs, I don't have the answer. But a lot of the answers simply lie in a strategy to reduce the harm that these drugs, in fact, create. There is a group called, I'm not going to get it right, but I'm going to say that the group is called Dance Safe. This is a group that shows up at these rave parties, and they actually test drugs for kids that are taking drugs like ecstasy. They're actually testing the ecstasy, and they're telling these kids this is safe, meaning safe by
those standards.
By the standards of ecstasy, or this is a drug, ecstasy, laced with something you don't want to take. Now, if your child is at that party, would you want your child subject to a potential drug that's going to kill them? Or would you want, again, of course you don't want them doing drugs anyway, or would you want them somehow with a chance for survival? So Bill, an aspirin-sized dose of heroin today, sitting on the table, if we're all heroin addicts, may give us the heroin high we're after. Tomorrow, because our supply source has been arrested and incarcerated, tomorrow we have a new supplier of heroin, and that same aspirin-sized dose of heroin happens to kill all three of us because it's of a different consistency. So there are strategies that we can simply adopt to cause less death.
That's a public health issue. That's not a puritanical thou shalt not.
And that is what the drug issue should be. The drug issue should be a health issue, not a criminal justice issue.
I can hear ringing in my head. Just say no. It's applied to sex. It's applied to drugs. It's applied to a variety of different things. And I think a lot of people say that if you abandon that view, that you're capitulating to the forces of evil, and we'll be sliding down the road to hell.
Well, and if you open the floodgates, and all bad things will happen.
54% of the graduating class of the year 2000 used illegal drugs. Bill, how can use go up any more than 54% of the graduating class having done illegal drugs?
And they were
and you have hit exactly on the criticism.
And they were put at additional risk because nobody is looking at the supply of the drugs.
Well, again, you don't know what it is. In many cases, you don't know what it is. You don't know what you're smoking. You don't know what you're ingesting. You don't know what you're shooting up. And as a result of that, that's what kills people. Here's another one for you. All right, another question and answer.
You've done this before.
Tobacco killed 450,000 people last year as a health consequence of doing tobacco. Alcohol killed 150,000 people last year as a consequence. And I'm not talking about drinking and driving now. I'm just talking about health consequence of doing alcohol. 100,000 people died last year as a consequence of legal prescription drugs. All right, here's your lifeline. If you need to call a friend, how many people died last year from cocaine and heroin in this country, in this whole country? Now, you just heard those three previous numbers. How many people died from cocaine and heroin? This is staggering.
Fewer.
I would guess low thousands.
Low thousands? How many?
2,000 one, 3,000 the other.
Not a bad guess. In the vicinity of 8,000 people.
Which is dramatically less than
all
these legal things.
Which is dramatically less, and you can make, and there are those that argue, well, of course it's only 8,000 because of the policies that we have in place. Well, baloney. If we had policies in place...
Well, that gets you back to the 54%.
Well, if we had policies in place, you could actually argue that you could eliminate the 8,000 because you would do away with overdose. You would do away with the infectious diseases that are killing people because of drugs.
See, my concern, you know, that there is the objection that just, you know, if you allow it, then you're sliding down that slope. What I find distressing, and I think it must be part of what you're dealing with, is the incredible amount of corruption that is spawned by the wealth that is associated with drugs. You talk about the high prices, but the corruption that affects police forces, it affects border police, it affects governments, it affects probably politics in lots of places, certainly local politics.
Well, and it shapes many cities' social structures.
But it would seem that the cost of the social corruption, particularly in a democratic environment, is at least as destructive as all the other things you've talked about.
You see, I agree with everything that you say. I don't disagree with a thing, but I really don't come at it from that direction. I come at it from the direction that sliding down that slippery slope, 80 million Americans have done this. 80 million Americans. I'm coming at this from the standpoint of being reality-based. Is there not a better... Is it fundamentally a crime to smoke marijuana if you're not doing any harm to anybody else other than yourself? Is that fundamentally something that should end you up in jail? I say no.
Our guest is Governor Gary Johnson. Bill Russell, Governor Johnson, and I will be back shortly. When we come back, let's find out just why people object to Governor Johnson's ideas. Or do they? I'm Paula Gordon. Please stay with us.